This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The attacks in Paris 12 days ago left 130 people dead and hundreds wounded. And along with the outpouring of support for Parisians, there was a question that arose in this country about Syrian immigrants and whether or not the United States should be stepping up its acceptance of refugees from the civil war in that country. The connection is a little bit fuzzy, but there's a fear that terrorists or those who mean to do harm in other countries could be disguising themselves as Syrian refugees in order to gain entry into Europe and America. In the United States, that's resulted in 31 governors from around the country voicing fear or concern about these refugees landing in their states and asking the federal government to put a halt to resettlement proceedings. Others, including Vermont's governor, voiced support for accepting refugees. Here's Governor Shumlin just after the weekend of the attacks.
Where when people are dying, when people's lives are being threatened, when they're getting in little rafts to escape wherever they were, risking their lives, losing their lives in many cases to get there, that we don't become the country that says, we're closing the borders, we don't trust you, and we're not going to let you in.
And yesterday, Shumlin met with Congolese refugees who recently resettled in Burlington to reiterate his stance.
So I wanted to come as your governor at a time when I know that refugees all over America are wondering whether or not they are welcome to say happy Thanksgiving. We are thankful that you are Vermonters, and we look forward to welcoming more refugees who are leaving horrid circumstances to come to this promised land.
But New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan, also a Democrat, told reporters at a press conference a week ago that she wanted a temporary pause in accepting refugees to her state.
As you know, what my statement said was that I asked the federal government to halt the resettlement of Syrian refugees. They do have exclusive authority in terms of resettlement of refugees. But I thought it was appropriate to let them understand that from a governor's point of view, that the public safety of my state is my responsibility, and that I was very concerned that the FBI director had expressed concerns about their vetting process, and that our own experience in New Hampshire in trying to get information from the federal government has been challenging from time to time on refugee resettlement. So I thought it was very important, as I said on Monday, to halt the process temporarily, and it should be a temporary halt. I am confident that we can provide for security and stand up for our values as a welcoming nation. But I do think that we have to get this right, and we should take the time in the face of changing world events to make sure we're doing it right.
That was New Hampshire Governor Democrat Maggie Hassan last week. Today on Vermont Edition, we're getting into the discussion of refugees and resettlement that's been swirling around political circles and kitchen tables. Ahead in the program, we want to hear your opinions and comments on accepting Syrian refugees into Vermont. To that end, share your thoughts with us now by writing to vermontedition@vpr.net. But first, we're going to get a clearer picture on the process refugees go through before they're resettled into the United States and once they are here. And we're going to specifically talk about the refugee resettlement process in Vermont. I'm joined now by Amila Mirjanovic, director of the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
How many Syrian refugees are there globally? And then we can talk a little bit more about getting down into these numbers of how many might be coming here. But globally, how many Syrian refugees are there?
So half of Syria's pre-war population was displaced by the war, so 10 million out of about 20 million people. 4.2 million are registered as refugees globally. The majority are in the neighboring countries around Syria, Turkey, Jordan, and Lebanon, and some have made it to the Western Europe. Since 2011, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees has referred 23,000 Syrian refugees for the U.S. refugee admissions, and less than 2,000 have been admitted.
That's right. Less than 2,000
total
so far have been admitted to the United States, although President Obama has pledged to accept 10,000 Syrian refugees in this fiscal year 2016, and that's over and above the normal amount of refugees that the United States takes. What's Vermont's capacity for accepting more refugees?
So the process of assessing our capacity to resettle refugees is a multi-step process, and it involves consultations with stakeholders, including the state refugee coordinator, the state refugee health coordinator, our schools, our healthcare providers, and local governance. This process took place in May of this year, and at the time, we were planning for 70,000 to be admitted this year. Into the United States, and around 325 into Vermont.
Which is fairly typical. 300 to 325 is about what we've been accepting
in
recent years.
On average, what we have been accepting over the past several years. So with the raise in admissions for the nation to 85,000, we have raised our projection for this fiscal year to 350 refugees coming from all around the world.
And 350 refugees into Vermont, that's just a little bit more than on a typical year we would see. So that feels completely doable to you?
That is absolutely doable. If we think in terms of families, you know, 25 people, that's five more families.
And most of the families who are resettled in Vermont are resettled into Chittenden County.
That's correct.
And that's because of the services that they have available to them and the ease of accessing those services?
It's really multiple factors that are affecting that. Certainly, it's the availability of services. It's also housing, which we all know is not great. However, over the years, we've developed relationships with local landlords, so we're able to secure housing. Also, employment, that's a big factor. There is, plentiful employment in Chittenden County. We work with, 30 employers around the county, and there's often, more jobs that are open than people to plug in.
We have just a few minutes here with Amila Mirjanovic, the director of the Refugee Resettlement Program. So if you have questions about the vetting process that refugees go through or how it's determined what countries refugees are coming from that are resettled into Vermont, so sort of the procedure here, if you have questions about procedure, now's the time to call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your questions on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Later in the program, we'll also be hearing Vermonters' personal thoughts on Syrian refugees and the probability of them coming to Vermont. So you can also give us a call to weigh in on that discussion of the political and cultural response. We'll be getting to that in a few minutes. Again, our number is 1-800-639-2211. Amila, many of the questions have been about the vetting process. Questions in this country in general have been about the vetting process that refugees go through before they're ever on American soil. Can you break down what that process is and how long it takes?
Yes, absolutely. So first, we should start by, defining who a refugee is. A refugee is someone who is fleeing persecution, who has crossed an international border, and they're being persecuted for the reasons of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a certain group.
So these are not, for example, Syrians. When we think of the Syrian refugee and the Syrian civil war issues, these are not Syrians who have been internally displaced. They're not considered refugees.
Yes, you have to be outside of your country of origin. The first step for all refugees is the UNHCR, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. And they are the ones who conduct a face-to-face interview and determine whether an individual falls under that definition. So an individual has to prove a well-founded fear of persecution. The UNHCR then makes a referral to the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program. And from there, refugees are subjected to further in-person interviews and then security checks. The federal agencies that are involved in that process include the Department of Homeland Security, the USCIS. The security checks are done against the FBI databases and other intelligence databases. And then there are numerous security checks in real time from the time a refugee applies by the time they're ready for travel. It may take up to 1,000 days. And then there are medical screenings. And then also upon arrival at the port of entry, refugees are once again subjected to another security screening by the Border Patrol.
How are those security checks conducted for people for whom there is very little documentation because they have been displaced?
Right. So the United States government has a system in place to deal with that issue. A lot of when people are fleeing, and I can speak from my personal experience, you're not necessarily thinking about, oh, where is my passport? Where is my, you know, birth certificate? You are running for your life. And that is exactly what's happening with refugees from Syria. You know, your parents are thinking about your safety and they're not thinking about necessarily getting your passport. But as I said, the U.S. system, different federal agencies have the system in place to deal with, you know, lack of paperwork.
And do you know what that's like, how that's done? Because, I mean, I guess that's one of the questions that people have is certainly that makes sense. But then there's also a question or a fear that some people have that people who do mean to do harm would take advantage of that lack of documentation to find a way in. So what are those checks and that system that's in place?
If there's any concern, I couldn't speak to, you know, the specifics about what that looks like. I don't think that's public information. It shouldn't be. But if there's any concern and any doubt at any point, our government can put anybody on hold, and that person can be on hold for, you know, the rest of their life. But I should also make a point and say, you know, unlike the system in Europe, the, you know, in the United States, no refugee can be resettled without a rigorous background check. And also no asylee can get their asylum without a court order. So we have a system that's very rigorous and that works.
And that is in contrast to the European system, which in from what I've been reading has been described variously as chaotic or muddled for some people.
Yes. Yep. Just the mere fact that, you know, Europe has open borders. It's much easier to travel and to get from one country to another. That's not the case with the United States refugee program.
So where are refugees who are awaiting that final vetting process and that approval from the government and from these agencies? Where are they living during those maybe 1,000 days?
So some of them might be in refugee camps or refugee camp-like situations. Others are in urban settings. It really varies from group to group. With Syrian refugees, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of them are in the neighboring countries around Syria. Some are in refugee camps, such as the refugee camp, the largest refugee camps housing Syrians in Jordan, and others are in urban settings in Lebanon or Turkey.
Are there people who claim asylum when they get to the United States in that way, that if you can cross the border and get on a plane or get here in some way, then you can claim asylum?
Yes, there are. And those people arrive as either visitors or as students, but still they have to prove, they have to show well-founded fear of persecution. And without that, without a court hearing and evidence, solid evidence, they will not be granted asylum.
And but where do they stay for those that time period while they're being vetted?
On the U.S. soil. They are somewhere in the community.
Oh, they are somewhere. Because some countries have specific places where people who are awaiting asylum are housed, and there are certainly controversies about that as well. But that's not the process in the United States. You are placed somewhere in the community while you're awaiting that final approval.
Again, it really depends on the status, the way somebody has entered the United States. There are some people who are in detention, asylum seekers who are in detention, but there are others who have, you know, temporary protective status, for example, who can be, you know, out there in the community while awaiting that
approval.
Approval.
Just a couple minutes left here with Amila Mirjanovic. And if you have a question about this vetting process that you really are curious about, now is the time to call 1-800-639-2211. You can also call in with your thoughts on this discussion that's been happening in this country and beyond about accepting Syrian refugees, what thoughts you have about Vermont's role in that, and what you think that we should be doing culturally. Again, 1-800-639-2211. In a couple of minutes, we'll be talking with Burlington representatives Chris Pearson and Kurt Wright. Let's go to Lincoln, who's calling in from Wheelock. Hi, Lincoln. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm just my main concern is I would like the safety of America and the citizens to come first. You know, and I mean we have citizens being slaughtered by the, you know. In America, you know, I mean, there's a growing problem with the, I guess, the African-American community here getting, is that there's been shootings that are unjustified.
So, Lincoln, when you think about then the safety of America, as you said, you want safety to come first, do you have questions about the vetting process for refugees?
Well, yes, I have an absolute vetting process question. I just don't think there's a proper way to, when a country is in disarray, there's no way to properly, what are we supposed to do, call up Syria and say, hey, can you give us a background check on this guy or this woman? First of all, I think any guy fleeing from a country is not willing to fight for his freedom, is not worthy to come to America. I think we should allow women and children here. But if a man is not willing to fight for his freedom and the freedom of his people, then he should not be allowed here.
Lincoln, thanks for your thoughts. Appreciate that. Amila Mirjanovic, maybe you could talk a little bit about the population when we look at the Syrian refugees who have been resettled in the United States. My understanding is that about two-thirds have been women and children.
Yes, that's correct. You know, families are fleeing persecution, and sometimes it's, you know, compact families with, you know, both parents and children, and a lot of times families get separated, so it's just the mom with the children. But what we have seen so far is that, exactly, you're right, that the majority have been women and children. But we should not be thinking in terms of, you know, who is more desirable. A family is a family, and we can't turn our backs on men who are fleeing and who are being persecuted.
When you hear comments like Lincoln's about security and safety concerns, you know, I know that as the director of this program, you don't wade into political debates. But do you have thoughts as the director of the Refugee Resettlement Program on that question of weighing security and personal safety and national security and continuing a policy that has been in place and has been part of the United States, many argue, since its inception, that this is a country that welcomes people of other cultures and other countries who want to come here and make a life? So how do you weigh those questions?
Yes. So national security, obviously, is a top priority for all of us. But we, at the same time, we cannot forget the fact that America was built by immigrants. And this is at the core of our values. And as our president said, you know, we can't close our hearts and our doors to those seeking safe haven. So for someone who has come to this country as a refugee and, you know, now being in this role as the director of the refugee program and who have seen, you know, hundreds and thousands of refugees come to Vermont and contribute in amazing ways to our community, you know, we just cannot afford to close our doors to those who are seeking protection and freedom.
I want to let you go and have this other part of the conversation that is political and cultural and these questions that people are wrestling with. But just so that we have one more last platform to stand on as we have that conversation, what is the likelihood that Vermont would be one of the places that Syrian refugees are resettled?
So for this fiscal year, which for us started October 1st, we have an opportunity to resettle Syrian refugees. When and how many will arrive, we don't know at this point.
But it is likely that Vermont will see some.
Yes, it is.
And just to reiterate, governors, individual governors, do not have a say in who and how many and when refugees are resettled.
That's right. And we're very lucky to have Governor Shumlin come out in support of refugee resettlement. We're very grateful.
Amila Mirjanovic is the director of the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We are looking at the issue of whether, when, and at what rate Vermont might accept Syrian refugees. Coming up, we'll talk with two Vermont state representatives whose constituencies include refugee communities and who have differing feelings on the idea of resettling Syrian refugees here. If you'd like to share your opinions, now's the time. 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We just heard from Amila Mirjanovic, who leads the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program. She was telling us about the vetting process refugees go through before they're allowed into the United States. That lengthy process isn't enough to satisfy everyone that refugees from Syria should be welcomed with open arms. It's become a loud debate since the Paris terror attacks just over a week ago, with politicians and regular citizens discussing the issue. The Reverend Debbie Ingram leads the organization Vermont Interfaith Action. Last Thursday night, she called for Vermont to welcome Syrian refugees here.
As a person of faith, I believe that we need to focus on our common humanity, and we need to acts out of love and compassion and justice and not out of fear and hatred. And it was fear and hatred that caused the horrors in Paris. And for us to react in a similar way only compounds that horror. And so we need to do the right thing, the morally right thing, and welcome those who are in great need and help them to resettle in a safer environment.
The next day, a small group of people demonstrated at the State House to urge caution in accepting Syrian refugees. Here's Rick Lawrence of Richmond.
It has got nothing to do with the refugees. It's got to do with a security problem in this country in general, where the FBI and the CIA are telling the federal government that they do not have enough resources to properly vet the people coming in. That's concerning. ISIS is very intelligent. They're like cockroaches. They know how to move around pretty well without us seeing them. They did it in Paris. The more evidence that comes out, the top leaders were right there.
This is clearly a conversation in which Vermonters are trying to weigh their personal and political convictions with real questions and fears about security. If you'd like to share where your thoughts lie right now, our number is 1-800-639-2211, or have the conversation with us online. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition and share your perspective there. We're joined now by Representative Kurt Wright of Burlington and Representative Chris Pearson of Burlington. Thanks to both of you for being here to share this conversation.
Great. Thanks for having us.
So, Kurt Wright, you've been listening to what this process is like for refugees resettling here. Both of you have been listening as we talked with Emila Mirjanovic. You have been commenting on your Facebook page since the terrorist attacks with your concerns about the process and the idea of Syrian refugees coming to Vermont. Can you talk a little bit about your perspective?
Sure. And first of all, let me say thank you to VPR for this program. And I think trying to elevate the discussion from what, frankly, it has been to some degree around the country and in Vermont. Some of the Republican presidential candidates, I think, have used unfortunate language. But I also think the governor and Matt Dunn, a candidate for governor, have used unfortunate language. What this should not be about, if you disagree with me and you think the program is vetted properly, that if you disagree, then you're supporting bigotry, you're supporting hatred, you're supporting racism, all of that. I think that is really unfortunate because it's insulting to thousands of people who really do have, at least they view and I view it, as legitimate concerns. So let's start there. I mean, I think that we all, certainly there's pockets of people who are bigots and racists, et cetera, but for the vast majority of people, we want to support refugees. This country has always been a humanitarian country, and we always will be. So the question really boils down to not bigotry and not hatred and all of that. What the question boils down to is the particularly this program, is it safe and secure right now, the vetting process, such that we should continue it? Or should we do, as we just heard on your program, Maggie Hassan, governor of New Hampshire, say, supporting at least a temporary halt in the program? She said she couldn't get answers from the federal government about it, and it was more to her about the security of her citizens. So again, to me, I think that with the issues we've heard, one, does ISIS want to infiltrate the program? We know that they do, and they've had some success.
What success are you pointing
well,
to?
Well, it's pretty apparent that they had some success in Paris. At least one of them had a passport that looks like
to my understanding, has been mostly, by most officials, it's seen to be a false passport.
Well, I don't know. I was watching programs last night that were still saying that one of them was associated with ISIS. So there may be some conflicting reports there. But what I was hearing last night, still on a couple of different programs, were still saying that it was. But clearly they want to. We know that, and there has been success by al-Qaeda, actually. Al-Qaeda infiltrated the resettlement. I believe it was the Iraqi resettlement program in 2009. It was only two out of thousands of people, but it was enough that the president actually temporarily halted the program a few years ago, as reported on ABC News on November 18th. So that says, would we ever suspend a program? Well, clearly we would, because the president did. There was practically no fanfare about it at the time. It was very quiet. I'm not sure Congress was even told about it. But it was temporarily suspended. It's been reported on the news. And that's
what you think should happen.
It was temporarily suspended because of concerns about security. And so what we have to know here is, in light of what just happened in Paris, we're dealing with a group of barbaric people who have lit people on fire in cages, beheaded people, done incredible acts of torture, and have, you know, now created the carnage in Paris, and there's a wave of terrorism across Europe right now. They're on high alert in different places in Europe. So we have to be very, very careful that as much as we want to help people, and we do, that we don't inadvertently let some people slip in here that absolutely should not be here. So there's plenty more points to make, but let me stop there and turn it over to my friend Chris Pearson.
Yeah, and we have a lot of listeners who are also thinking about this and want to add their thoughts. But Chris Pearson, I'd like to get your perspective here as we have this conversation as well.
Well, I think that we do share a lot, actually, and obviously want to protect Vermonters and protect Americans here at home. But your example about the halt in Iraq refugees coming in is an example of how the program works. And you know, we do not see any real evidence of refugees coming in and creating terrorist attacks here at home. There's not that data out there to support that fear. It's a reasonable fear, but I think we have to look at what's happened. You know, to my mind, the role of leaders, community leaders, political leaders, is to help us all learn from our past mistakes. And there are a lot of past mistakes that we have come to admit around this whole area. You know, the Japanese internment is very simple to look at, kind of a blight on our past. Reagan apologized, said, quote, it was race prejudice, war hysteria, and a failure of political leadership as he offered to pay the survivors. The St. Louis ship in the 1930s, we turned back some 900 Jewish refugees fleeing from Europe. Many of them went on to die in the Holocaust because of this sort of attitude. You know, the fact is, we're talking about very, very complex situation. Nobody disagrees with that. The Paris attacks were carried out by French and Belgian nationals. They were not refugees. They were not. There's not evidence to suggest they were coming directly from Syria. And I think it's important and incumbent on us to acknowledge part of what's happening is a flight from a war-torn area that is, frankly, something that we added to. We created this problem when we went in and destabilized Iraq. I think we have to own some of that, and therefore we have something, I would argue, an obligation to help the people that are fleeing monstrous, you know, just unimaginable realities. The statue on the side of the Liberty, on the Statue of Liberty, asks us, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free. There's no disclaimer about, except if you're coming from a war-torn country. You know, we have to honor that. This is part of we have many examples in our history where we have not done this well, and we have some examples where we have done it well, and we really need to lean on the better parts of our nature to get this right and recognize, Chris, that we are going to see more refugees in the coming years between conflicts and climate change and so on. So we better get this right.
Well, let me ask you about that same question that I asked Emilia a little while ago. And, you know, what Kurt is mentioning is a fear that we do want to help people, but there's a concern that some people who want to harm us could slip through. And well, that's a concern that many people share. So for you, what is that balance of weighing that desire and need to be open to help people who are fleeing those very terrorists,
right,
that Kurt Wright was talking about, with the understanding that perhaps we won't get it right in 100% of the cases? Is that something that you feel like is a risk that you're willing to take?
Well, there are risks everywhere, right? There's some 70 million visitors to this country every year. So we don't close out the tourist industry altogether. We have all of these things have risks. But, you know, for every American that's killed by a foreign terrorist, either here or at home, there's 1,000 Americans who are killed by gun deaths every year. So, you know, we everything in our society, we have some risks in our society. The question is, how do you deal with these challenges? And I don't think America benefits. I don't think I think we do well when we are kind and good neighbors to the world community. Frankly, I think if we shut out Syrian refugees, we actually help ISIS by alienating potentially the people that are trying to flee.
Kurt, I want to get you back in, but let's get a couple of voices here from listeners, and then I promise I'll give you a chance to share what you're thinking as well. Tatiana says Vermont should take as many refugees as possible. She writes, Vermont is a state with a decreasing population, especially of working-aged adults. We also have declining enrollments in many of our schools. Refugees will boost our economy, enrich our culture, and save our schools. Many of these refugees are already highly educated and eager to work. Others will gain skills rapidly. She also adds, refugees living here in safety are the people most capable of preventing youth from joining extremist organizations by providing support and dialogue to otherwise isolated and disenfranchised members of their communities. And let's go to Ken, calling in from Ticonderoga. Hi, Ken. Your thoughts this morning.
Hi.
Hi.
America's obviously in need of a spinal graft, a little rebar might help, and a heart transplant. We are so not the descendants of our Ethan Allen Green Mountain Boy 18th century family.
Problem, in what way?
I got the biggest problem I've got is politicians using this as a political stand as opposed to a humanitarian concern.
And Ken, what's your perspective?
We should let as many refugees in, at least as France. France has taken in another 30,000 after the attack.
Ken, thanks for your call. I appreciate that perspective. Let's get another one here from John in Middlebury. John, what are you thinking?
Yes, hi. Thanks for the call. Three problems I'm having with what I've heard in the last half an hour. First of all, can you hear me okay? Because I'm inside a building.
Yep, we gotcha.
Okay. Number one is the fact that your previous guest said that passports may not be necessary or required for admittance. And from what I've been reading, many passports have been forged, photographs have been cut out. That's hole number one. Hole number two is she said that during the interim period during which they will be decided whether or not to be admitted, they'll be in with the community, which makes absolutely no sense at all to me. And number three is I've seen photographs, I'm sure a lot of people have, of people coming on rafts. And, of course, along with the heart-wrenching photos that we've all seen, we've also seen rafts full of, maybe 20 or 30 fighting young men. And the average, refugee is a family of man, woman, child. So until the vetting process is at least done with some sincerity, I don't think they should be allowed into Vermont, until these problems are fixed, because it's a known fact, as a previous caller said, that they are looking for ways to get around this system.
John, I hear your thoughts, and thank you. I want to clarify just a couple of things before we move on. The boats of refugees that are crossing through and entering into Europe, generally those refugees will not be the ones that are admitted into the United States. My understanding is that most of the refugees who are going to be placed in the United States are not the ones who are currently in Europe. They're the ones who are currently in neighboring countries to Syria, just so that we have that clear. But I understand as well you have some security concerns and some questions about the vetting process and safety. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Mary's on the line from Winchester, New Hampshire. Mary, where do you fall?
Hi, Jane. It's Mary from Vermont Partnership. A lot of what has already been said is what I'm thinking. Well, where I fall is that we need to check our bias and our stereotypes that we all have about people who we perceive as dangerous or different than ourselves, and really take a look at what the accuracy is of those, and to kind of dig into our hearts a little bit and recognize that oftentimes, our fear of difference and our fear of people who we perceive as different is often based on inconsistencies and negative stereotypes. I live in New Hampshire. I've been calling Maggie Hassan's office every day. I'm deeply disturbed with her position. I understand she's using the language of pausing And yet I'm wondering what is fueling that. And I would agree with one of the callers earlier that I believe it's some political implications for her if she were to go ahead and take the same stand as Shumlin. So anyway, I'll get off the air. But again, I just really want to say to Vermonters to stand strong and, you know, keep working your communities to end racism and racial assumptions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary, for your call. That's Mary Gannon with the Vermont Partnership for Fairness and Diversity. And one more email here, Kelly, who says, not a single one of the Paris attackers was Syrian. All of them were European nationals. Should we ban Europeans from immigrating to the U.S.? In recent years, there have been terrorist attacks in Norway and Sweden by right-wing domestic groups. Where's the public outcry against the Scandinavian threat to our borders? There is no public outcry against these groups because the arguments against Syrian refugees are based in racism and religious prejudice rather than facts or evidence. Kurt Wright, I want to give you a chance to respond here because you said right at the beginning that that's one of the concerns that you have is that people attach racism and bigotry and perhaps attach them to your thoughts. And that seems to be
right, exactly.
A question
and that's what a couple of callers have just said. And that's just I reject that. That's not where I have no problem with that. Most Muslims, most people that are coming over are actually good citizens and will be great people. And we want to help them. But I've talked to Congressman King yesterday, actually. I called his office and got him on the phone and talked to him. He has been the vice chair of the intelligence of the Homeland Security Committee for a long time and knows this issue very, very well. And he told me that the difference here in this program is that not only is there chaos in the country, but we have no government that we can contact. We have no people on the ground that we can verify what we're seeing in terms of the vetting process. He has very little confidence in the vetting process. And Congress just passed a measure asking for a pause, and actually 4 dozen Democrats, despite enormous pressure from the president of the United States, despite enormous pressure from Nancy Pelosi, joined in with Republicans in a solid majority asking for a pause in this program.
And yet CIA Director John Brennan spoke with the president in support of the additional Syrian refugees, saying that the process needs to be strengthened, but he doesn't support a pause.
And the process needs to be strengthened. And while Chris, and I agree with Chris about the Japanese internment, all those things were awful. But this is a different group than anything we have ever faced before. It is absolutely different than anything we have faced before. So I think it really behooves us to be very careful. The point that I made before, despite what Chris said, I think still holds, is the fact that did the president stop the program briefly before? Yes. So there is actually a history. If he thought there was a security issue before, he stopped it. So right now we have a palpable, yes, fear in the country because of what we've seen happen in Europe. And Matt Dowd said this on one of the Sunday morning programs this week with George Stephanopoulos, that the Republicans have been over the top on the national scene, but the president and national Democrats also have not even spoken to the people's real concern about this program, about this issue. The president could have backed up, started over, and said, hey, let's really take a close look at this program and make sure that Americans are confident about this at a time when we see real security risks.
Chris Pearson, just a couple of thoughts from you.
I would just say that I think when we open our hearts and borders up to refugees, it strengthens us. We have over 6,000 refugees living in Vermont. In my high school, in our high school, Burlington High School, over 25 languages spoken, and I think this makes us a stronger and richer community.
It does, and I have a friend that's Michael Lee who ran for state rep with me and narrowly lost, and he came over his family came over as Cambodian refugees, so don't think that I'm not sensitive to this issue. I've talked with him about it. He somewhat differs with me on it. But the reality is we have to be concerned about security at a time when we see what's going on in Europe. We don't need that over here. So let's reach out with our hearts. But let's make sure that we're also being secure and for the entire country and for Vermont.
Well, I appreciate both of you sharing your concerns, your questions, and your positions with us. That's Representative Kurt Wright of Burlington and Representative Chris Pearson, also of Burlington. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, don't be alarmed if you see thousands of crows descending on your neighborhood. We'll explain why. This is Vermont Edition.
Casting shadows on the winter sky is just a day counting crows. One for sorrow, two for joy.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. And the reason we're listening to Counting Crows right now is because crows have been on the minds of bird diva Bridget Butler and birders throughout Vermont. This is the time of year when we see some interesting activity among the crow population. And Bridget's here to discuss that and her Crows in Vermont project. Bridget, nice to talk with you again.
Hey, good to be back, Jane.
So that Counting Crows song is called Murder of One, and of course many people will know that a flock or a group of crows together is called a murder, and you've been looking at murders around the state. What are the crows up to at this time of year?
Yeah, so this is a great time of year to kind of shift your focus, and who can avoid watching huge groups of crows kind of gathering overhead. And as we move into the wintertime, it generally starts in November and goes through March, crows start to roost together in very, very large numbers. And we can see hundreds up to thousands. I've counted as many as 5,000 together in downtown St. Albans, where I live, during the evenings, during the wintertime. And it's just this cool phenomenon. And so I decided to kind of capture people's interest in it and design a site where people can go and report some of these winter behaviors that they're seeing in crows.
Bridget, when you say they can gather in the thousands, and you counted 5,000 just in downtown St. Albans, why do they gather in such large groups?
Yeah, so during the wintertime, crows, they kind of need each other. They really need each other. During the summer, they're hanging out in small family groups from like 2 to 8 crows. And then in the wintertime, it's really beneficial for all these birds to flock up. And we see this in other birds as well. Traveling in a flock is a way to get information about food. It's a way to protect yourself. When crows roost together at night, they're able to avoid owls, especially great horned owls, which is a huge predator for these guys. And it's a way to find a mate. Crows are one of the birds that start mating in the early springtime. So these gathering sites are a way for them to pair up and find a mate as well.
And you're actually asking people who see these big groups of crows, these murders, to let you know on your iNaturalist page?
Yeah, so we're using the iNaturalist platform, which is this really great platform that allows you to use your Droid phone or your iPhone to capture a picture or an image or to just upload your count of what you're seeing. And it's open source, so it allows anybody, you know, just anybody in general to create a project. And so I worked with a couple of friends about 2 years ago to pull this together because they were very interested in what was going on with crows. And so there's a couple things we're looking at. I would love it if people would find crows in Vermont and establish an iNaturalist account, and that way you can report what you're seeing. And we're looking for three different things. We're looking for streams of crows. So around 2 hours before dark, we're looking for these lines of crows that are all heading in one direction. We're looking for staging sites, and so this happens a little bit before dark, where the birds are kind of gathering in a whole bunch of different spots. Now, this could be urban or it could be rural sites, and so I'm really curious about how this is going to play out, if we can find some rural roost sites. And so these staging areas are where they'll hang out until it's dark, and what's so cool is it's like somebody in that group makes the decision, and they all go to this final roosting site where there can be upwards of, 1,000 crows together. So 5,000 has been my big count. I'm really curious to see if some of the other urban areas or even rural towns are finding large numbers like this as well.
Now, I'm going to out our call screener, Sarah Matthews. When you said that you saw 5,000 crows in downtown St. Albans, I can see through the windows here. She gave this look like, and crows are certainly not beloved birds. Can you give us the warm fuzzies?
Yeah, you know, here's what's warm and fuzzy about crows. I think they're incredibly smart. They're super social. You're going to see them in these staging sites kind of playing with each other, talking to each other, fighting amongst each other. And if you think about it, this is kind of what we do at the end of the day, right? We all get together. We either have a meal together or we meet up with friends for drinks, and we talk about our days. And crows are doing that same sort of thing. And it's a way for them to survive the cold winters that we have in Vermont.
I should also point out crows can identify people, individuals. Yeah. So watch out, Sarah Matthews. Then they can then tell other crows to watch out for that person who we don't like, and they'll all squawk at you.
Yeah, so pretty be cool. Nice.
Yeah, be nice. They're very smart, right, Bridget?
They are super, super smart. There's some fascinating projects out there about just what you're talking about, them being able to identify individuals, of them establishing relationships with people who do feed them. There's a great story about a little girl who had been feeding them, I believe, somewhere out in the Midwest, and they were bringing her gifts. They were leaving little trinkets and gifts in her yard.
That's right. That's such a cool story. Well, if you want to know where the crows are in Vermont, Bridget Butler, we have a link to her Crows in Vermont page on iNaturalist, and you can add your own data there. Bridget, thank you so much for talking with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jane.
That's Bridget Butler, better known around these parts as the Bird Diva. And that's it for today. Now, Vermont Edition is taking a break, and we have no programming until Monday, but VPR has special programming planned to entertain and assist you in your Thanksgiving celebrations. You'll find all the details at vpr.net. And on Monday, when we're back here, we will have our winter reading show. You can let us know what books are on your wish list and which ones you keep recommending to friends and family. Write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net with your book recommendations and join us on Monday. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening and have a happy Thanksgiving.